So, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My topic this morning is all about fellowship. And the core verse to this is going to be a familiar one to you because it was the same one that Eric used last week. And I'm not sure who's preaching next week, but it'll be the same again next week as well, which is Acts chapter 2, verse 42, which says, "They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer." So, personally, you know, I'm not surprised. If you're going to make a list of what was really important to the early church, prayer, that would definitely be on there. Learning from the teachings, that would definitely be on there. But, yeah, I'll be a little bit surprised that maybe fellowship would be number three on that list. But here it is. So I think this proves the point that fellowship is not just useful, it's not just nice, but it is actually essential for the church. So that's why it's worth, well, hopefully worth, spending a whole Sunday discussing the topic of fellowship and digging into what exactly it means. So I like to be a little bit different in my preachers. I know that Eric does as well. So we're going to start with a family activity, because we are family together, aren't we? Richard Miller drums that into us a lot of times, doesn't he? That we're family on mission together. So what could we do as a family? We're going to play a game of family fortunes. So, to do this, I'm going to need six volunteers. Thank you. Come on down, first six. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Doesn't matter, because we're all family, so it doesn't matter what the teams are or anything. Are there a few more? Thank you very much. Give out. Have three on this side and maybe three over this side. I should have told the worship group I need a bit more space, shouldn't I? There we go. That's perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, Wendy, you're playing. Oh, brilliant. So, I don't know if you remember, but a couple of weeks ago, I gave you a little questionnaire. So you probably realise, right, that's what the questionnaire was for, to gather the data. If you've seen the show, they ask 100 people a question. I didn't ask 100 people, I asked 40-ish of you a couple of weeks ago. So the first question was, what European country would you most like to visit? Okay, so I'm going to start with this team over here. Obviously, you need to try and find what the most popular answer was, and then we'll see if it crops up on the screen.
France.
Going to go for France, okay. Is that on the list? Let's have a look. Oh, okay. So it was on the list. Five people said France, but there's a possibility of even better than that. What do you think? What's going to be the most popular answer? Oh, well, it's not France, so what else could you go for?
Spain.
Spain. Okay, let's have a look for Spain. Yeah! So you win round one. Let's have a look what the other answers were. So Italy was actually the most popular. And Germany, they're number four. Interesting. Okay, so my second question that I asked you was, what do you do or what do you like to do on a Sunday afternoon? So would you like to start the ball rolling this time? What do people do on a Sunday afternoon at Rugeley Community Church?
We're both going to sleep.
Sleep? Let's have a look for sleep. Yeah, that's the top answer. Yeah, I got various types of sleeping, resting, chilling, you know, I've got various types of that. So I'm afraid that the round is already over, but would you like to see if you can get number two? What do you think is a team?
Worship
God, pray. We'll put those together. Is that on the list? No. It is not. Spend time with family. Yes, that was on there. I don't know if you can get back to that, Matt. I'm not sure what you pressed now. But yes, there was visiting family, there was gardening and DIY, and there was eating. I think that was the before. Okay, Sam, the final question I asked you is probably the most intriguing. I said, if David Beckham, you know, one of the most famous people in the world probably, if he was to walk through the door right now, what would you do? Let's go over this side. What do you think?
Ask for an autograph. Ask for an autograph.
Okay, ask for an autograph. Is that one of the answers? It is, it's on there. That's the third most popular. So five of you said that you would ask for his autograph. Do you think you can do better? What would you do if David Beckham walked through the door? That could be your answer. Is that your answer? Yeah, okay. Is that on there? Yes, it is. And, I think that's quite a compliment for us as a church, isn't it? We're not into that all celebrity stuff. So actually the most popular answer is, well, who's that? Let's see what the other two were. So say hello and do nothing. No, just ignore him, basically. But okay, thank you very much, team. So well done, Peter and Julie. Okay, so we had a family activity together. Hopefully you laughed, maybe.
Yes.
Maybe you learnt something about each other from hearing what the different answers were. What I'd like to do now is just talk to the person, somebody near to you. I just want you to discuss, just for like 1 minute, did fellowship just take place? Okay? So during that activity, do you think that fellowship took place? Yes or no, and why? Just have a little chat. Okay, hopefully that's caused a little bit of a debate. So maybe you thought that it did, because obviously the reason I just shared, it was a shared activity, we had fun, we learned a little bit about each other. But maybe you thought, well, no, actually, because maybe it was fellowship for us here, but maybe it wasn't fellowship for you watching. Maybe you weren't engaged, maybe you don't like games, therefore maybe you thought the fellowship didn't take place. Or maybe you thought, well, it didn't have anything to do with Jesus, and therefore it's not fellowship. So, that's kind of where I came from, I suppose. Because God does things a little bit differently in his kingdom, doesn't he? Which means that you get people like me giving a sermon on fellowship. I'm not a fellowship expert, and actually I found that my view of fellowship wasn't quite right. My focus about fellowship was always about the activity. There must be an activity to have fellowship. But actually, it's slightly different to that. That's why I was challenged about this, and that's why I feel that it is useful for all of us to look a little bit deeper as to what fellowship is actually all about. In talking about sort of an activity together, so I was sort of challenged to say, well, does engaging in a shared activity guarantee fellowship is taking place? And I think you'll agree with me that the answer is no. I've got some examples here. For example, people that are travelling on a train together, they're engaged in a shared activity. They are travelling possibly to the same destination. They're all together in the same space. But is there fellowship? Not normally. Maybe with the person that you're friends with or you're sitting next to, but not as a group of people. We might recognise the fact that sometimes in a relationship you can be sharing lots of time together, lots of activities together, but sometimes if the communication isn't there or the friendship or the love isn't there, then actually the fellowship isn't there, even though you might be living in the same house as somebody. In the bottom left, maybe your shared activity is a battle. Maybe your shared activity is a war, is a fight. Obviously, again, it's a shared activity, but is it fellowship? Well, no, because you're sort of enemies to each other. And then finally, again, sort of challenging me is that if I have a friend round and we watch the football together, is fellowship necessarily taking place? If all we're doing is sitting and watching, You know, is fellowship there? So that's what I was challenged about. So let's have a quick look at the root translation of the word fellowship. You probably know that the original verse here from Acts was written in ancient Greek. And so obviously the word fellowship wasn't actually written then. It was translated into the word fellowship. And also, obviously, as time goes past, our understanding of a word can change. So that if we look in the English dictionary right now, we get companionship, company, association, community of interest, activity, a feeling, emotion, or an experience, a united body of people sharing common interests and goals, a partnership, membership. Okay? This isn't far away from it, but say it's the meaning has changed slightly over time. So the original Greek word here is koinonia, and that can also be translated as communion, joint participation, to share with one, as in that has in everything, a participation, a gift jointly contributed, a collection, a contribution. So you can see that the shift there is slightly more to the doing. It's an activity, it's a participation, rather than just sharing an activity or an interest. And there's other words here. We got koinos, and do, which means fellowship, and cornelio. So let's just have a look at some of the so that word koinonia appears in the New Testament and is actually translated as other things. So as the person doing the translating has seen the context of what they were saying, there's actually sometimes different words that are used. So for example, in Luke chapter 5, verse 10, Jesus is calling his disciples, and two of them, John and Luke, are partners in fishing. That was their partnership. And then again, we're using the word koinonia here as partnership. In Philippians chapter 1, 3, 5, we've got partnership in the gospel. Again, that word koinonia has been translated into a different English word. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, 16 to 18, we have participation in communion. And then in Romans chapter 15, 26, 27, again, it's a sharing spiritual and material blessings. So, if we had to look at what fellowship means today, I'm going to start with a few points. And the first one is about relationship. So, 1 John chapter 1, verse 13 says, "That which we have seen and heard, we proclaim also to you, that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ." So a Christian life begins with a relationship with God. That's when we come into becoming a Christian, is when we accept that relationship with Jesus. So he stops being a sort of a distant relative that we've heard things about and we've got some knowledge, to actually being a person that we are in relationship with. And relationship is actually the reason for the activity. In the examples that I showed you earlier with the people on the train, it's the activity coming first. You know, they don't know each other, didn't realise they were going to be together. The activity came first, and then we're expecting fellowship to follow on. It doesn't necessarily. If the relationship comes first, then fellowship is much more likely to flow out of that activity. And finally, my point is that relationships are not easily broken. You know, if you have a brother, if you have an aunt, then it doesn't really matter what happens. You might have a falling out, there might be an argument, someone might leave the country, but actually, you know, they are still your brother and your aunt. You know, the relationship is more permanent. Well, there's a friendship, for example, they come and go and they change over time. Second of all, partnership. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 23 says, "As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker for your benefit. And as for our brothers, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ." So we are partners in Jesus and we're working for his work on the earth. Philippians chapter 1, verse 27 says, "Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come to see you or am absent, may I hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving for the faith of the gospel." So this is a picture of partnership, being in one spirit, one mind. And when I was at the a conference last weekend, somebody gave an illustration of a boat with rowers in it. And when you see rowing on the Olympics, obviously they are at the very top of their game. They're all totally in time with each other. They're all pulling in the same direction. The boat goes along very quickly and very smoothly. But if we're in a boat with people who don't really know what they're doing, they might not be having a right technique. The timing might be out. People might be rowing in the wrong direction. Some people might not be rowing at all. It could be a bit of a mess. So our partnership means that we are united, that we are working together for a common goal. And we saw earlier on with the example of fishing together, and the disciples, that was their business, was fishing. So it was more than just a hobby. It was more than just an activity. It was more than just do you fancy going fishing? Yeah, that was their livelihood. That was their job. So it was important to them that they work together to catch as many fish as possible so that they could make a living and they could feed their families. Next, we've got companionship. And so Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25 says, "Not neglecting to meet together, as is a habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." And 1 John chapter 3, verse 24 says, "Whoever keeps his commandments abides in God, and God in him. And by this we know that he abides in us, by the Spirit whom he has given us." So my point here is, first of all, that companionship to me is a long-term thing. You can't really be a companion with someone just for half an hour and then move on to something else. The words here we're using, abide in us. Meeting together is a regular event. And also I wanted to get a point across that fellowship is about vertical and horizontal fellowship. So we can see that meeting together as a group of human beings, as a group of people in the body of Christ, in the church, that is horizontal fellowship. So we're fellowshipping with each other. But we also need to have vertical fellowship. We need to have fellowship with God as well. And we need both of those things to be balanced as a Christian. If all of our time is spent fellowshipping with each other, then our relationship with God is going to suffer. And actually, if you spend all of our time fellowshipping with God, then actually we're not going to be that effective as being a Christian here on the earth. Next is sharing. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8, 12 to 15 says, "For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. As it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack." So we probably already knew this about fellowship to do with sharing, our gifts and our talents. So yes, it's to do with sharing money. That's probably the one that we think about first. But of course, it's about everything that we have to give. When we share words, when we talk in tongues, when we share a song at church, when we pray for each other, that's sharing our gifts that God has given us. And we've also got our talents to share as well. I don't know whether you remember, but as part of that little survey that I gave you, I asked you, you know, what is it you're good at that no one else really knows? So I'm pleased to say that we have a wealth of talent here in the church on which to draw. So, for example, if you're planning a bodyboarding trip, then there is someone in this church that can give you advice about that and teach you. If your garden is a mess, we've got gardeners here. We've got various people that are good at baking and cake decorating and making pastry. And then if you need someone to help you do some research, then there's people here as well. So, yeah, even if our talents are slightly wacky, like someone who's very good at bending their fingers, I can't think of immediate use for that. But yeah, all I'm saying is everybody has got something to give here at this church. And it's just a case of kind of publicising what you're good at and then for people to make use of that talent. Oh dear. My ip has gone. So it's a bit of a recap about what we've said so far. So the fellowship, it starts with a fellowship with God. That's our sort of cement for fellowship. It unites us in a common purpose. We have fellowship in the gospel. You know, that's our message. Oh, thank you, Matt. What talent. What talent he is. If you need help with PowerPoint, Matt's your guy. It's relationship-focused, not activity-focused. Remember, the fellowship, the relationship comes first and then the activity. It's a long-term thing rather than a short-term thing. And we share... sharing benefits to all the partners. That's something that I didn't quite remember to say earlier. So if we're in partnership with each other, then you know we're basically, from a business point of view, it's like we're all working for the same company. So that if we help each other, we're all the company benefits as a whole. So as a body of Christ, we have a purpose on here on the earth. So if by helping each other, yeah, we're all helping the community of believers as a whole. Some other points that I wanted to raise on a more practical level. So we probably recognise that when we're having conversations with each other, there are different levels of conversation that we can have. And I've described them here as surface conversation. So we're talking about weather, we're talking about sports, or about food, or where we ate. Yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. We can have personal conversations, so we can start talking about our families or our jobs or our health. And then we can have spiritual conversations. We're talking about our walk with Jesus and how that's going. We can pray for each other. So, say, and there's nothing wrong with any of those types of conversation, but for fellowship to really take hold and to flourish, we need to be aiming to dig deeper with our conversations. And to help you do that, I was watching a preach on YouTube about fellowship. And the guy doing the preaching gave three tips for this. He said, first of all, don't rush. And I guess for most of us, that's not a problem. We don't like to dive into the spiritual stuff straight away. But you know, there's always some people that straight away like, how are you doing? And then they ask you like a really personal question, like, ooh, okay. So first of all, you know, don't rush. You know, we need to get to know each other first. We need to work at our, you know, we can start with a service conversation, then we can go to a personal level, and then we can go deeper. Second tip was go first. So instead of you asking all the questions, why don't you share something personal about your life first? And then that might put the other person at ease and be more willing to reciprocate. Third tip was be specific. So yeah, we all know that question, don't we? So how's everything going? Very easy, isn't it, to say, yeah, everything's fine, or, you know, just put it to one side. And often, I guess, we might feel that person isn't really interested when they say, so, how's everything? And that might not be the case. They might be actually really interested in our lives as a whole, but it, you know, it's the impression that gives. So, I need to be more specific when we're asking questions. And this is part of this sort of long-term idea of fellowship. But if we're in a long-term fellowship with each other, then we would know the questions to ask because we might have prayed for somebody a couple of weeks before. So we can say, well, you know, how's that situation going now? What's changed? We can ask them, okay, how is your son, Tony? You know, you'd know their names and be able to ask those specific questions. Next, fellowship requires commitment. And I've got a list there of things that we need to watch out for in ourselves that hinder fellowship from a commitment level. So the first one is entitlement. You know, do we always think that, you know, we deserve everything that we get, that when people help us, we're not accepting that with a thankful heart? We just think, yeah, well, that's what people do, isn't it? We all help each other. You know, we need to be careful that we're always very thankful when people do things for us, and we have an attitude of having a thankful heart. And we also need to make sure that we give as well as receive. Second one, superiority. So maybe for you it's a case that, oh, you know, I can't go and do that job because, you know, that's somebody else's job, or you feel more superior than other people. I don't think that's a problem in this church, but it's something to watch out for. Agenda. So do you find that when you do fellowship with other people, that there's a sort of an ulterior motive for you to do that? Maybe you want to talk to them about a specific subject. Maybe you want to invite them to a particular gathering. Maybe you want to ask them about some advice or some business things. We need to be careful that our agenda doesn't come in too much when we're doing fellowship with other people. Aloofness, good word, I think, underused. So aloofness means that, you know, we don't really want to get too stuck in. We want to keep people at an arm's length because, you know, we just want to be in the background. I think for me that's something that I need to watch out for in my life. And that's mostly just due to shyness, I suppose. But I need to remind myself that actually, you know, people, that I am important in God, and that I do actually have relevant and interesting things to say to people, and that, you know, they will hear that. And then the final one is injury. So maybe you've had bad experiences with fellowship in the past, where you've shared things and you've been hurt by other people in the church. And, you know, that happens because none of us are perfect, and these things that will happen. So for you, I've got a particular verse I wanted to bring, which is Philippians chapter 3, which says, "For his sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish, in order that I might gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends on faith, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection, and may share in his sufferings, becoming like him in death, that by any means possible I may attend the resurrection from the dead." So the point here is that if we've been hurt by other people, if people have accused us of things that we haven't done, if people have been unkind to us, if they've mocked us, and even if they've physically harmed us, that Jesus knows how you feel. Part of Jesus' life on this earth was about taking punishment that he didn't deserve, so Jesus knows how we feel about that. And actually, if we're suffering like Jesus suffered, then actually we can experience another element of what Jesus is all about. So I think there's actually an elephant in the room. I don't know whether you can read that from where you are. It says, "Only Alan was prepared to acknowledge the elephant in the room." And I'm assuming that Alan is this person in the chair that's getting squashed by this massive elephant. So if you're not familiar with the term, it just means that, you know, well, there's something that hasn't really been mentioned yet, and that's to be something that is quite important, and that is growth groups. So growth groups are actually really good for fellowship. Because fellowship at church is not always easy, it's not always straightforward. There's lots of you here, so it's kind of difficult to actually talk to every single person on a Sunday. Sometimes we're quite rushed, we need to get away to visit family or to do other activities. Maybe we're busy serving, so the people that are doing the tea and coffee, maybe they don't get such a chance to do the fellowship afterwards. Children, I know all about having children, and the fact that that makes fellowship difficult sometimes, because you've got to put their needs first because they're maybe unhappy about something. So a good setting for quality fellowship is with a growth group, because it's a safe environment, it's a familiar environment, so it's the same people pretty much that you're going to meet time after time, so you can build that long-term relationship with each other. And it's a place where you can be honest with each other without judgment. It's obviously a place to read the Bible and to pray with each other and to worship as well. So my sort of recap again. We need to add the fact that that fellowship is more of a long-term thing, and that sharing benefits all the partners. I think there's a few missing from there. I don't know whether you noticed, you probably didn't, that I used some pictures in the... Oh, people nodded, okay. I used some pictures in the background of my slides, and I just wanted to explain to you the reasons why I chose those particular pictures to go into the background. So in the top left-hand corner there, I've got what looks like a piece of very old parchment. So this is to illustrate that fellowship is an ancient practice. You know, this is what the early church were doing. And I think it's actually quite cool and quite exciting that we can do those things that the early church were doing. You know, they were meeting together. They were having food together. They were doing activities together. They were praying together. And we can actually share in that as well. And that early church was born into quite a hostile society. Jesus was crucified just a few weeks earlier. So to be a Christian was not particularly popular and not particularly healthy at the time. We've actually got a different problem now, which is not the fact that... Can we go back one? Which is not the fact that Jesus was crucified only a few weeks ago. Our problem is that Jesus was crucified a couple of thousand years ago. So we've kind of got the opposite end of the problem. But still, we know that being a church is not easy. It's not always easy being a Christian in England. So the fact that this is an ancient practice, we can relate to that ancient church. That's my second picture. Top right-hand corner. Anyone want to say what that is? That's some galvanized steel. And the process of galvanizing is you basically just get a piece of steel, and those of us that are into our materials will know that the problem with steel is that it rusts. It's very cheap material, it's quite strong, readily available, but you know, its number one downside is that it rusts. So galvanizing is a process where they dip it into molten zinc to give it a zinc coating, and that protects it from rusting. It weatherproofs it. So actually, I thought that fellowship is a bit like that for us. You know, fellowship prevents our relationships from rusting, both horizontally with each other and vertically with God. And next, in the bottom left-hand corner there, I've got a bit of a mess. Don't know whether you agree. But yeah, fellowship can be messy at times when we're in small groups and we're maybe focusing on just a few things that didn't go quite right. Fellowship can be messy. But actually, if we have a larger viewpoint on things, hopefully this will work. Yeah, Matt's working on it. But if we sort of, well, there we go. If we look at the bigger picture, that some of you might recognise. This is Water Lilies by Monet. I'm not a big fan, if I'm honest, but a lot of people think that this is a very beautiful painting. So, you know, the fact that it looks a bit messy up close, when we take a step back, you know, that we can see that the God thinks that fellowship is beautiful. And then, finally, I've got this picture here, which, you know, how can I do a sermon on fellowship without mentioning The Lord of the Rings? Because the first film, if you recall, is called The Fellowship of the Ring. Okay, I'm not going to go into the story in great detail, but you know, these very different people, we've got elves, humans, dwarfs and hobbits, wizards, all these different people, they're working together for one common goal. They want to take a ring from point A to point B and destroy it. And you know, that's the thing that unites them together on this mission. And it's really tough, and lots of things happen on the way that really stretches them. But you know, ultimately, they are committed to their goal, which they achieve. So I'm going to leave that slide up on there. So hopefully, I've challenged your ideas about what fellowship is, and you know, want to encourage you that if you're not part of a growth group, that maybe you ought to be part of a growth group, because it's the best setting for quality fellowship to take place.